What is up, everybody? Welcome to the Locked On Nuggets podcast, part of the Locked On NBA Network, Monday edition of the Locked On Nuggets podcast. I'm your host, Adam Mades from DNVR, and I'm joined by my co-host, who is just glowing right now, just absolutely glowing, basking in the glory of Patrick Mahomes. Once again, every Monday when we do the show is how I open it. I just talk about Mahomes and how you are in a perfect state of bliss. It's Matt Moore. How you doing, Matt?
Hey, look, the Broncos cost me a lot of money today. Broncos cost me a lot of money today. I had the Dolphins about every which way. So
good. You know, I'm glad to hear that. I don't even care anymore, to be honest. I was putting up Christmas lights during the Bronco game. I'd come down, I'd check in, but I was like, you know, I got stuff to do. Today's on the show, we're not talking Broncos. That was the Broncos portion of the show. But we are going to talk about an extremely eventful weekend. Basically, all of free agency has happened over the course of the last 3 days. We gave you instant reactions to Jeremy Grant and his decision to leave the Denver Nuggets last week. We did a late sort of emergency podcast. But, you know, we've had time now to digest it, Matt, and we've had time to reflect. We've made some phone calls. We've talked to some people. We have a different perspective on it. But in the time from that show to this one, the rest of the Denver Nuggets deals have happened. The Nuggets are complete. It appears as though the Nuggets are complete and ready to bring their roster in, which is good because the season begins in like, I don't know, 9 days, something like that. So we're going to address all of those moves and just kind of talk about where the Denver Nuggets are right now. But before we do, man, I wanted to start here with you because I wanted to ask for your updated perspective on Jeremy Grant, because I know for me personally, when it went down, I had a perspective and I still feel most of those things, but you know, the motion's gone. So of course the perspective is always a little bit better once that goes. What's your updated perspective on Jeremy Grant deciding not to stay in Denver?
I don't think I have much of a change in terms of what I think about it. Because I think it caught the Nuggets off guard. Him leaving is bad. The deal from Detroit is absurd. He's like categorically overpaid. I don't know how. Here's the thing. I think with the Nuggets being a Nuggets podcast, you have to be careful because it's just very easy for it to be like, oh, it's just sour grapes. And I'm like, look, whatever Jeremy had decided, good for him. Like the band just made $60 million. So good for him.
Right.
If he left for the money, I would have understood it. If he left for what he felt was a better chance to win, whether like if he was like, I think the Clippers with Kawhi, you know, or if he was like, I can be the missing piece or like whatever, sure. Even though he was the missing piece in Denver. Okay. But like that's clearly just not what happened. Like it was just a matter of like he has a personal relationship with Troy Weaver. And he wanted to take a lot more shots. And I just, you know, for me, I just think it's like, it's not, you know, we'll see if this is what's best for his career, because there are guys that leave and they're like, this
sometimes it works.
Happened to me. I'm so glad that this happened. This is like, this is where I should have been. I feel like this is home. And then there are guys that go and are like, I should have never left. Like, this is a really bad decision. And you don't really know. And that's honestly Jeremy's business. He gets to decide that. I do think for the Denver Nuggets, you know, I know that I figured that Saturday and Sunday would be like, okay, they're going to be fine. You know, they got Michael Green, who's a decent replacement. They'll figure out some stuff and they're going to be okay. They still got Jokic and Murray. They still got MPJ. They're still going to be really good. I am still the problem I have is I'm still just like, you're going to be the same team in the regular season, sure. Because Jeremy wasn't that great in the regular season. There were very few games I can look back on and go, Grant won them that game or this game. It was just like, oh, he was kind of good in spots. But in the playoffs, there were multiple big games where I was able to go, Jeremy Grant was one of the top three reasons why the Denver Nuggets won that game. And that to me is the big thing. It's just like, you may be as good of a regular season team, but you're not going to be as good of a playoff team. And that's just the way it is.
I think that's mostly true. I think I mostly agree with that. The way I would put it is that I don't know that Denver is a worse regular season team. And I don't even know if they're a worse playoff team. They're a more vulnerable playoff team. What I mean by that is if Denver goes up against certain teams with Jeremy Grant, Utah might be one of them. I'm like, okay, they're not going to miss Jeremy Grant in this series because he's not going to be the one guarding, you know, these players. Like, who's he guarding in that one? But there are the Lakers, who obviously they have to go through. I think the Clippers, who they went through last year and won, the Mavericks. Those are teams that you look at and go, yeah, Denver now is significantly more vulnerable, to the point where at this very moment, and we're so far away from the playoffs, but at this very moment, I look at those and go, ooh, I don't think I'd pick Denver. So I don't know. I do go a little bit back and forth on it there. I will say, when we did this podcast last time, it felt a lot more catastrophic than I think it does now. The other thing that I look at, and we're going to talk about this a lot throughout the over the course of the show, this season now rests so much more heavily on the back of Michael Porter Jr. than I think it did before. Because if Michael Porter flamed out this year, he just couldn't grasp the defense. He took too many bad shots. It didn't work out. Well, okay, you slide Jeremy to the small forward spot, and you got a fix there. Now, that's not the case. They don't have Michael Porter. There's nowhere else to turn. And I think that's a blessing and a curse, because the Denver Nuggets, in theory, are not a title contender unless they have a third piece of this equation. They've got two of them. Michael Porter's their best bet at that. So taking the training wheels off and saying sink or swim, it's more obvious now that if they don't swim, that they're going to sink. It's going to be more obvious that's the case. But let's be honest, their title window always hinged on those three guys not only being the best versions of themselves, but fitting together. And I think that's what this season now, to me, becomes all about.
I just think that's so much, like, you're not wrong. It's just that the reason this is bad is the NBA is a slippery slope.
So, yep, for sure.
And when things start to go bad, they can go bad very quickly. And yep. As many, like, this is what really I think is crushing about Grant, is that they lost the momentum. Like, they had pulled
it. I would say they risk losing the momentum, because this definitely feels like it's going to stop it. But we'll see. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, it's just, I guess the other thing is just if MPJ struggles, there's just not, like you said, Grant can't take over for him. And so now it's just like, but MPJ's not at a point in his career where he's ready for that. Like, he still needs, even if it's like, oh, he becomes like the third scoring option, there's other stuff that goes into it. Like, there's other pieces of the game that go into it beyond just he fits in the offense and he scores. Let me push back on that.
Let's have this debate. So in the bubble, before teams were game planning, in the seeding round, he looked fantastic. And him and Jokic, remember, Murray hadn't quite arrived yet. Him and Jokic looked great, and it looked like they had a two-man game. The month of January, everybody's injured except for Will Barton, him, and Jokic. They just dominated. They steamrolled everybody. So I understand what you're saying about the playoffs, but the regular season isn't like the playoffs. This is teams flying into Denver, having 30 minutes of scouting, and then going out and playing. You're looking around like completely. I wish you guys could see this. Matt is just completely ignoring this question and waiting for it to be over.
No, I'm not. I'm thinking about it, because I'm just like trying to. You're right in the sense that in the regular season, it really, like, even if it's okay, he crashes and burns versus the Clippers on a Tuesday. Thursday, you're right back at it versus the Hawks. Oh, Michael Porter Jr. got right back at it, scored 30 points, and the Nuggets won by 15. Right. Like, that's the key here, right? And ultimately, as much as I love the kind of things that Jeremy Grant brings to the table, like, what MPJ does puts you in another tier. They're just going to have to – I think most of it is, like, this. You mentioned all the pressure on MPJ. I feel like there's more pressure on the coaching staff.
Oh, for sure. Yep, for sure.
Because now they got to figure out – We need to go over all the pieces that they added. Sure. But, like, they got to piece together this thing in such a way that it's just not going to be the same. They're not going to be able to do what they could have done last year on multiple levels. There's just a lot of different reasons that they're going to have to change things on with the starters and with the bench unit, with the course of the whole game. Like, there's a lot of changes that are going to have to be made, because they are going to have to duct tape this thing together, because that's what they ultimately had to do with the roster.
I think they might have needed to do that anyway, and this expedites the process. Now, it's probably not the cleanest, it's certainly not the safest, but I do think that there is a scenario in which this is a positive. But we'll talk about more of that, as well as all of the other people on the other side. And then coming up tomorrow on Locked On Nuggets, the latest news from the Denver Nuggets, whatever that might be. We'll be right back.
Hey, before we go to break, I want to tell you about Built Bar. Built Bar is delicious-er. That's because they've added 6 new flavors, including caramel brownie, cookies and cream, and apple almond crisp, to go along with the old flavors like raspberry, banana bread, and toffee almond. They're covered in 100% chocolate. They're soft and easy to chew. They're great if you're trying to be health conscious. They're good for the keto diet. the peanut butter one's got 19 grams of protein in it. That's just incredible. Coconut almond, 18 grams of protein. Cherry Barcia, delicious, 17 grams of protein. Cookies and cream, 17 grams of protein. All of these things packed with protein. Go to BuiltBar.com and use promo code LOCKEDON and you'll get $10 off your next order. Use promo code LOCKEDON for $10 off at BuiltBar.com. We'll be right back.
Back here on the Locked On Nuggets podcast, I'm joined by Matt Moore from the Action Network. I'm Adam Ades. So we talked a little bit about Jerami Grant. We started to talk about Denver and the position they're in. But let's talk about, before we get to all of that, let's talk about the guys they added. Jamichael Green. I know that you've been a Jamichael Green fan for a while because I remember you talking about him for the last several years. And we've talked about different players that have been available and what they bring to the table. My take on Jamichael Green is that he can shoot the three. He can play, I think, interior defense better than Jerami Grant was. I think he's a better defensive power forward, but a much less versatile player. What's your read on Jamichael Green and what he brings to the table?
Yeah, so one, he's a pretty good rebounder. When he was getting minutes with Memphis, he was averaging 8 per game, and that's pretty decent.
What was the offensive, like, were those mostly defensive rebounds?
Yeah, it was mostly defensive rebounds. You know, in Memphis, I was surprised because I was like, are you guys going to extend it? Because when they were messing around with this contract, I was like, why don't you guys want to keep him? And they were just like, we just don't know if he's actually going to be a shooter. And I was like, but he's got these little bits and pieces.
Right.
And they're like, yeah, we're not really sold. And then he got moved, and he's been a 39% shooter or better both years with the Clippers. If you provide him spacing, he can shoot the three pretty well. Works really hard. I like these kind of guys. He's of that tweener mold. Like, I don't want to compare him to Draymond Green, but 6'8", right? Can pass a little bit. Not a bad passer. Don't get him under pressure. Like, you won't.
Right.
He's trapped in the corner. He's not going to make him some sort
low
of
low leverage passer. If he's over, he can make the swing pass. Yeah.
Yeah. He'll do his job. He's like perfectly serviceable. There will be, you know, probably the interior scoring is a struggle, but honestly, that's one thing I think that's probably good about him is that he won't try.
Right.
He won't try putbacks underneath. He won't try tipbacks. Like, he's not a guy that tries to go up in the trees unnecessarily. He's like, okay, I got the rebound. I'm not going to make this. Let's back this out and reset the offense. He should do pretty well in units with Jokic in terms of spacing the floor and understanding big to big passing. He should do pretty well with Paul Millsap if they run any sort of combination with him and Millsap in with Millsap at small ball five.
Yeah,
that should work fine. You can play five out with that lineup.
I think
lineup.
They will play with that lineup.
Yeah, so you can play small ball five with that lineup, which is pretty good. So, you know, they've got he is perfectly serviceable, a perfectly decent replacement. He is totally fine.
A good value, too, because I think it's weird, but some of this is just contrasting it to Jerami Grant. But $7.5 million a year is like what he's worth, I think. Which is right. Nice because should you move on from him, it's not like, oh my God, they had to reach. You know, they lost Jerami Grant, so they had to overpay the next guy. But let's talk about Paul Millsap because he's coming back to $10 million 1 year. Now, one thing that's important to note here, Paul Millsap now effectively has a no trade clause because anytime you re-sign your own players for just one season, that's just the way the CBA works, you can't trade that player for that season without their consent. I doubt. Because one of the reasons Paul Millsap said he wanted to stay in Denver was because he didn't want to have to uproot his family. I highly doubt that Denver could trade him and say, hey, we really could win if we trade you for this player. So Millsap here to stay for 1 year, $10 million. What do you think, Matt?
Two things happened that worked out pretty well for Paul. Jerami Grant left, which made the Nuggets absolutely have to keep Paul Millsap, and the Boston Celtics had the mid-level exception left, which they were going to offer to Paul Millsap. And so – you know, honestly, it's like, it's cool that Paul turned down the Celtics and was like, no, I'm good. You know, we'll see kind of where he goes from here. I have to wonder if this is probably the last year with the Nuggets. He'll probably wind up finishing something. I could see him settling down here long term. But I do think that it's good to like, look, Millsap last year, especially in the regular season, was still really good.
Yep.
He just can't he's not going to play 72 games.
And I think he's more matchup dependent at this point of his career. He just isn't as quick enough to move out on the perimeter. But like you said, here's the crazy thing. Millsap had the best plus minus on the team this year, in net rating. Now, some of this was because he missed all that time and like all the other guys had to play shorthanded and he never did. But some of this is just that he fits really well, especially in the regular season with his Denver Nuggets roster. I mean, the numbers bear it out.
This is part of the thing is like, it's not that the numbers have like show that he's got a greater impact than you can possibly pick up watching. You just, if you want to understand Paul Millsap's game, and the reason that a lot of people, especially in Denver, don't, is because they don't go back and they don't watch possession by possession. Because you go back like, oh, like, wow, that was a really good rotation by him. Oh, Millsap swiped at the ball, and that's why they couldn't get that exit.
Oh, it's the defense. Yeah, it's the defense. Like, the offense looks maybe a little bit clunkier, although it's still effective, but it's the defense that just works when he's on the court.
I mean, look, most of it with the offense is honestly just he's slow because he's old. Yeah. He's 35. Like, he's just old. And it's, you know, back when he was 28, he had more burst. And so he could burst up the court and get the position. Like, but also, he shot really well from three last year. And he was really annoyed that it left him in the bubble. Like, I also say this for Millsap's performance in the bubble. Like, look, he was going to get overwhelmed in that Utah series no matter what. Like, yeah. He was going to get overwhelmed.
That's what I mean. Yeah, tough. They're just tough matchups.
It's just a bad matchup for him. And it got worse in the last few days with Derek Favors coming back. Like, it got worse. Mm-hmm. That said, you know, I do think that there are other matchups where I think he can probably play. And I think that him being a guy of routine, like, he is rigorous with his routine and has built those things and needs things to be stable and like go through, like Ray Allen was like this, like very detail oriented, like needs those same routines over and over and over again. The bubble was a complete disruption of that. So I kind of have confidence that he's going to get back to playing much better. Now he's not going to be like, he's still going to struggle to finish. That's going to be a problem again, 35 and he's not very tall, but
do you think he takes on a different mentality this season though? Cause I felt like there's been a 2-year process of him going from like, they don't post him up that often anymore. They don't give him these ISOs in this. I wonder if this next year it's like, hey, I'm a defender.
And I wonder if he loses a bunch of weight. That'd be interesting. Is if like, he just like super slims down.
Yeah.
Right. And goes that route. That wouldn't be super shocking. Cause They need some muscle for sure. Now the Nuggets may say otherwise, but like, here's the thing. The plan was originally that if Mason was not available, which they were kind of expecting Mason not to be available, that they were going to re-sign Grant and then move Millsap actually to small ball backup five. But with Grant now gone, I think you have to make him a little, you have to convert Millsap back to pure stretch four. So I think that kind of switches up some of what they're looking at there.
Who starts, Millsap or Green? Or Michael Porter, I guess, at four?
MPJ has to start.
At like, three or four, though, as my thought is like, really, yeah. Is it Green or Millsap or neither?
I got a feeling Millsap's going to win it in camp. I got a feeling like Malone will get there and just realize that Jamichael hasn't played with any of these guys.
Right.
Still getting used to it. Jamichael's not so good at everything. Let me put it this way. If Millsap doesn't start, it's because Millsap looks worse, not that Jamichael looks better.
Mm, gotcha. The other piece of news from the current roster is that Torrey Craig, and it was sad to see on you saw it, the progression was on Twitter. He said something like, no love. And you just knew, okay, maybe that means Denver's not going to – you were waiting to see if Denver was going to bring him back. He tweets out, no love. 10-15 minutes later, Woj reports that he is not coming back. Denver is rescinding the qualifying offer. So Torrey Craig's gone. He went to Milwaukee, which I think a great landing spot for him. But what do you make of this, that Torrey Craig was not brought back for the team? It felt like the first time that the Nuggets haven't brought back a guy that wanted to be back in the Tim Connelly era.
I think that they knew all of this stuff is connected. I think they knew they needed to get, like, they had to get another five, right? They had to clear a roster spot and the money to get Hartenstein. They needed, like, they could not go in with just Najee at backup center. Like, that just could not be the thing. I also think that Campazzo complicates this, that his signing, which I have decided I'm just going to go down with the ship. Like, somebody needs to be the contrarian, so I'm just going to go ahead and fill the role. I don't think this was going to be the thing. I'm not sure this was the right move.
You would have brought him back.
No, I don't mind getting rid of Craig. Honestly, the one I'm more kind of bugged by is Keita.
Interesting.
I like Keita more. I thought that Keita could do a lot of what Torrey could do, but had a little bit more offensive punch.
Well, I was going to save this for the last segment, but I think Whittington, they think maybe has some of that similar thing. I know you haven't probably haven't scouting him too much. He was in the draft in 2015. He's been in Europe since, but 6'8", 220. I think a lot of the similar, he's like got Kata Bates Diop's body, and I think is known for some of the same things.
Right.
I think he's kind of a Kata replacement.
But my thing is just like, why not have multiple of those options and see which one works versus a 5'11" veteran.
Oh, come off it. Oh, come on. Oh, all right. You know what? Maybe I'll tell you why on the other side of this final break, because Campazzo, baby, I'm excited. I have Campazzo fever. I wish you guys could all see Matt Moore's face right now. It is real pain. But we're going to talk about that. And then later tomorrow, we're going to talk about the latest Denver Nuggets news. We'll be right back. Back here on the Locked On Nuggets podcast, I'm Adam Mattes, joined by Matt Moore. All right, you're not a believer. I can't believe you're not a believer, man. This guy, Facundo Campazzo, 5'11", yes, extremely teeny, but I tell you what, man, an absolute wizard with the basketball, highlight passes, runs the pick and roll just as well as anybody, pound for pound as well as anybody. I always loved when people used to do, Allen Iverson is pound for pound the best player ever. And you'd say, well, you don't measure greatness in pounds, so this doesn't make sense. You can't be pound for pound the greatest. It's insane. By this logic, Shaq is like average. He just is big, so I don't know. But Campazzo, so here's the thing that I think, and I've kind of heard some talk about this, but the Nuggets, I think, are going to run a lot of multi-point guard sets. They've got a lot on their roster that are all going to play. Jamal Murray, of course, Monte Morris, and now Campazzo, I think, is here to play. You've also got Dozier. You got Will Barton who can handle the ball and run some. I think they're going to run a lot of 2-point guard lineups. I think they're going to run a lot of 3-guard lineups with Will Barton, maybe even Gary Harris, maybe PJ Dozier playing some small forward throughout the year. And if you have, I mean, one of the things is Denver has had a little bit more traditional lineups, but if you start playing Michael Porter at the 4 or you just have spacing around the court everywhere and you have a point guard like that, it really makes me think of the Rick Carlisle offenses that spread you out and just murder teams in the regular season, maybe not in the postseason, but in the regular season. And there's at least a chance where this is exactly what happens with Campazzo. Why are you so low on it, Matt? Why do you hate fun?
We've moved past the fun phase, guys. Like, the Nuggets now operate at a serious NBA level where you need physicality, athleticism, and like direct roles versus like, what does he do? Well, he's just like a really fun guy. Okay. Like, here's some numbers for you. Okay. And like, I'll do a full scouting report and get maybe a better sense of it. But like, what do you think he shot last year on jump shots?
Oh yeah. He's not like a great, he's not a great 3-point shooter. Although he seems to shoot better playing for Argentina than he does for Real Madrid, as many people have pointed out to me.
I'm sorry. Are the Nuggets in Argentina? Did they move?
They have an Argentina-ness to him, man.
Dude. He shot last year with Real Madrid. He shot 40% from the field, including in half court, 37% from the field.
Mm. Now, one thing, let me be honest with this, because one thing I have heard is that, you know, the European game just allows a lot more just hand checking and physicality. And one of the hopes is that with better 3-point shooting and spacing and more protection of the ball handler, that they think that could be like a real market inefficiency for him. So I don't, whether that not that's true, we're going to find out. I have no idea. I barely watched.
Part of me also is just like, I like PJ Dozier.
Me too. I like PJ Dozier.
Like, he's physical. He makes passes. He's athletic. He's an NBA player.
Well, we talked about Torrey being gone and you'd rather keep more of the guys. I think that he might be a Torrey replacement. They're not that different sized. I mean, Torrey's a little bit thicker, but I kind of feel like PJ Dozier can be.
Composure. We're officially calling any
composure,
lineup
man.
With Campazzo and Dozier.
I love it. Yes. That's true.
The composure line.
Oh, I love it. But I think PJ Dozier might still play in this team, but albeit as a small forward, especially if Will Barton's not available at the start of the year, which I kind of get the feeling he won't be. We'll find out.
Yeah, Okay, so what role is Campazzo going to fill?
What do you mean? Well, the Nuggets, I've talked about this a few times, especially when we talked about RJ Hampton, but the Nuggets haven't had that guy that just beats defenses with his own wizardry. Quick first step, which he has, he's incredibly quick. But then also just because he's so shifty, so little, like, I mean, he's just, you're chasing him around. So I do think that he might be one of those guys that can break the defense down without the crazy ball movement. He can be the first chain in it.
Yeah.
You really hate this guy. You don't want to give him a chance.
No, I'm willing to give him a chance. Like, look, the last Euro guy that I was wrong about is the Nuggets' best player on the team. Most of my thing is I think this is part of it. Well, one, you talked about like multiple ball handlers, and I know that the front office has looked for that. Like, they want multiple guards that can create, and I get that. We're back to the two offenses thing. Like, right back there where, like, it needs, and furthermore, why are we running the super complicated system when it needs to be MPJ, Murray, and Jokic? Just like a dose.
Let me provide you. You're not wrong with this, but I actually think it will work out in a different way. I hope it'll work out in a different way. But I think getting the ball popping is great for Michael Porter. I thought that in the playoffs last year, and this isn't anybody's fault, Michael Porter was thrown together at the last minute. He hadn't played with anybody. But I just felt like the ball never found him. And part of that was because you didn't have Will Barton there, who's one of your good ball handlers, one of your secondary ball handlers. So you had guys that weren't – PJ Dozier wasn't playing. So you had guys that weren't capable of making some of those secondary plays. And I think putting two or three point guards on the court, the chance of the ball getting popping, which we just haven't said for years consistently, I just think it goes up by quite a bit because you always are putting the ball in a capable decision maker's hand.
I also think it's going to be tough because I think that the way the team scout the Nuggets is so different that it makes it harder to play like the loose, free, fun style. I just think that gets tougher now because like teams are going to take them very seriously. This is the Western Conference finalists. Like, they're going to take them very seriously. And I also think that I just wonder, like, you know, if you make him a major part of the team and you're up against the Clippers, they're just going to hunt down the 5'11 dude. They're going to hunt him down. Right. I mean, they're just going to. Right. Like, in any sort of match.
In a playoffs, I just can't imagine Campazzo be. I mean, maybe, but.
Okay, but here's the thing. No, but this is really key. In the playoffs, you can't imagine him playing, right?
No, I can imagine him playing. It's just so risky. I just can't imagine him not getting destroyed. I mean.
Then what are we doing here?
Well, like, I mean,
this isn't 2016 where it's like the fun Nuggets are going to have some fun.
No. Well, here's where I think you're wrong. The Nuggets have Monte Morris, who I just don't know if they're going to be able to afford next year. I feel like they need to move him before the end of this season. They got Gary Harris, who they've been trying to move. Will Barton maybe, you know, would consider moving. Jermichael Green, who's going to be a tradable contract. You got Bull. You got all those picks. Denver didn't get Drew Holiday. I think they wanted him this year. I think that they're in better position now to have players that are both serviceable and on contracts that teams can stomach than they were going into this offseason. So if Campazzo works and another team likes him, maybe you can move him at that point. Monte Morris, teams are going to want him. Maybe somebody wants to expend him. So I just don't think that this squad is the one they bring into the playoffs. If it is, I don't have a lot of confidence in Denver competing for a championship this year. If it's not, I feel like they can get to the point they need to get to and then consolidate.
I also need to be very clear. The list of his accomplishments is insane. This guy, it gets ridiculous. Like,
we're doing the Luka thing. Like, oh, this slow dude's going to come to the NBA. And, well, look how slow he is.
Like, yeah, I totally get it. Argentine Cup winner, Argentine Cup MVP. Like, last April, he was the MVP for the month of April in the EuroLeague. Like, Spanish League Finals MVP. Like, three-time Spanish League champion, two-times EuroLeague champion. Like, on and on and on. Like, his list of accomplishments is insane.
It's pretty long. I know, it's a long list.
And, like, I've heard forever about how good he is. And I know that there are guys that can definitely translate. And like Luka, I was always like, oh, he's going to be really good. I didn't know he's going to be this good. Right. Like, I think very few people were like, oh, he's going to be an MVP by year two. But like Luka Doncic is the favorite to win MVP next season. Right. Like, he is the odds on favorite to win it next season. Yeah. I am totally okay with eating crow. I think part of it is that just like TJ is so excited about it, and I had to listen to him blather on about it on his podcast for like 20 minutes.
Okay. And like, no, I hear you.
He's just like so fun. And like Just the things he does.
I knew you would hate Capaz. I should have made a prediction that you would hate this team.
Like, what role does the 5'11 non-shooter have on the Denver Nuggets?
Do you hate Trae Young, too? Do you hate Trae Young?
Do what?
He's got a lot of Trae Young in his game. Do you not like Trae Young?
Trae Young is one of the best shooters in the league.
Yeah, he's a good shooter. Yeah, he's a good shooter.
He's an incredible shooter.
You hate J.J. Barea, too. I'll bet you do hate that one.
I love Jub Jub.
Oh, my God. I can't believe it. All right, we're going to get you on the Campazzo trade, man. We're going to get you on. But let me say two things. One, he's small, so he's vulnerable to certain players. But I'm told that he's actually a very, very good defender with his role. And we've seen this with small players before.
DJ Augustine.
DJ Augustine, just incredible defender. No, but even we go up to Toronto. I don't know why I'm drawing a blank here. Who's their backup point guard?
Fred VanVleet.
Van Fleet. Like, Van Fleet has a very important defensive role for them, and he's tiny, and, like, he's vulnerable to certain types, but he can do things. And I've been told Campazzo's the same way. Quick hands is very good at anticipation, and it's just so small that he can, like, crowd people's spaces in ways that makes them uncomfortable. So maybe he's that.
I think it's rough, though, that – would you agree that Campazzo is probably, like – for lack of a better term, like the sexiest name the Nuggets have, right? Like that's
the name,
like
the big, just the name.
That's like the big thing that they added. Like you wouldn't go like, oh, they had Jamichael Green. It's like, oh, they had Jamichael Green. That's like solid.
Oh yeah, oof, yeah. It's not Hartenstein. It's not Whittington. So yeah, I mean, there's the list is really short here. So yes, it probably is.
So that's what the Nuggets did. They added the 5'11", fun dude. The Clippers added Serge Ibaka.
Right.
The Lakers added Marc Gasol.
The Lakers added everybody
also
else.
Also quite a fine European player, by the way.
One you like there, huh? Yeah. But here's one thing that I think goes underrated about the Campazzo signing. Maybe I'm wrong. Like I said, everything – Denver's season is going to be on like a knife's edge, I think, the entire season because there's just so many – if they – happen to just thread the needle all season long, I think they can be great. If they don't, things can fall apart pretty quickly. But here's one thing. Talk about Michael Malone not liking the rookies and not, you know, like how much of a headache he gets trying to teach these guys when they just don't have a baseline, you know, Bol Bol. I think Jokic the same way. Jokic is going to have Bol Bol, who I think is going to play. Everything I hear is he's going to have a chance to compete for real minutes, not just like token third string. He's going to have a chance to compete for real minutes going into camp. Whether or not he'll win those minutes, we'll find out. But he's going to have a chance. You've also got Michael Porter Jr. That guy has got to make – I think Jokic is in line for a very frustrating year. Jokic doesn't have patience for this type of thing. Jokic gets frustrated with Michael Porter as much as anybody does, and you see him, he's visible. He doesn't – his nonverbals are very loud. I think Campazzo is one of those guys that can help make the game fun for Jokic. And I'm worried that they're running out low on those guys. You look at Torrey Craig, Jokic would get so mad at him. Michael Porter, Bol Bol, get so mad at him. Even Gary Harris, this idea of like, I have to reverse the ball to the other side, but I don't want to hand it to him because he can't do anything with it. I think giving him Campazzo and Craig and Monte and Murray and those guys playing more, I think that just makes Jokic feel a little bit better about getting the ball popping. I honestly think that makes an impact on this season.
Let's before we go, let's talk about Hartenstein.
You had nothing on that. I deviated from our talking point so I could get that out there.
Oh, I like it. I mean, you're right. Like, it's good basically that you have to give the big child a toy that he can play with. That's
100%.
Cool.
You're giving him a bunch of things that he's going to that, are just going to drive
cool
him nuts.
That's cool that the championship contention may rest upon.
Wow. Matt is not about any of this.
Giving him a 5'11 playmate.
Basketball's not fun for Matt. He doesn't like it. All right, Isaiah. He doesn't want any of the fun. Isaiah Hartenstein, give me your take.
Love him. I love him. That was actually a killer.
Can you enable screen sharing real quick?
I can.
Yeah, just go down there because I want to share something with you here. I knew it. Do you see how you do it? The little screen share, the light, little carrot, allow multiple or whatever.
Allow multiple. Okay, multiple. Okay.
There it is. Now I'm going to screen share. I had it written down. Matt is going to love him. I just knew it. I knew you would be in on Hartenstein.
Yeah, I love him. He's great. Like, he's great. He especially, I think that this coaching staff can get a lot out of him defensively. I would say that you can replace 75 to 80% of Mason with him or better. And the big thing is you're not going to have as many of the, like, even if you don't get all of the good stuff that Mason brought, you also don't get any of the bad. So like one of the things I like about him a lot, he doesn't try and do too much. Mm. Like, no reverse dunks, none of that. he will play exactly within his role. He will rim run very hard. I love any player that comes out of RGV. I love every single player that comes out of Rio Grande Valley. They are established. They are well coached. They are taught a role.
Yeah.
Like, they are players that know what their role is, as opposed to, what's your role? I'm a super fun guy. Like, no, like, he's a professional basketball player that will go rebound.
Oh, my God.
But no, seriously, I think he'll do, like, there. My only concern is that, like, anybody behind Jokic is going to be frustrating because he's not Jokic. You're not going to have the passing that Mason gave you. And Mason was a really good passer.
Right, yeah.
He was a really underrated passer. But he'll run the floor. He'll finish plays. He'll do his job. He'll be good in pick and roll coverage. Like, I think this is a perfectly serviceable backup five. I thought it was a really good get.
I hear he could even potentially play alongside Jokic should the team need that. I mean, there's other guys I think ahead of him, but if they needed to, if there were injuries and COVID, whatever else, he could play the four because he stretches the court well enough and is low usage and all of this or that. So I could see it. You know, it's funny. I watched that. So I go online. I'm like, all right, let me look at some of these videos, highlights of him. And I find one that says 16 points, 5 block shots. And I watch it. It's against the Timberwolves. Two of those blocks were against Kata. One of them is Kata Bates-Diop, and one of them against Noah Vonleh. And I go, okay. I don't know how I'm supposed to rate that. He's really good at blocking Kata Bates-Diop. But I don't know. So he's young, though. I mean, the other thing about him is he's bounced around a little bit and not found a home. And he's another one of these Tim Connelly off the dumpster pile. Well, this guy hasn't landed. Maybe he'll land here. Maybe now he's primed to kind of take that step. So I'm curious to see it. So I'm more optimistic about this season than you. Some other teams got better, including the Clippers and Lakers. The Clippers, I'm still a little bit we'll see. But the Lakers for sure got
Ibaka. They lost Montrezl Harrell.
I mean, look, yeah, maybe. I mean, sure, maybe. I'll tell you what.
The Nuggets won that series because of Montrezl Harrell. There were contributing factors for why the Clippers could not overcome that. Like, their chemistry was a problem. There's, like, lots of problems. But, like, ultimately, like, it was Montrezl Harrell. And now Montrezl Harrell is gone, and they added Serge Ibaka, who is
40 years old. But he also, you know who also guarded Jokic really well for the Clippers? Jamichael Green, no longer with the team.
That's the downside for you, is that the Lakers got definably better.
They're a lot better. That's so dumb. We'll talk about that later this week, I'm sure. So we didn't get to Greg Whittington, but we'll save him for tomorrow. I have a feeling Greg Whittington's going to not make the final cut a lot this year, but we will we'll talk about him tomorrow.
One more thing. You don't have any problem with like the likelihood of like no, it's fine, because like if you put RJ on like a 4-year plan, Composite is probably not part of like a 4-year plan, so it's fine.
Right? Yeah. RJ Hampton, probably every draft analyst has, and even I think we'll find out as we talk to the team here shortly. But I don't think he's in the plans this year. I think he is on the Michael Porter Bowl path, which is this year you're a redshirt year, next year you're a low minutes year, year three we hope for you to be good. I'm excited about him. I just, Denver, they picked up point guards. There's no room for him. There's no room for him right now. But I think that's a good thing. I think that's fine. All right. Thanks so much for tuning in, guys, and for checking us out. We're 1 week away. This is our final week before training camp. No, it doesn't feel like it. This is our final week before we're back in full swing with the NBA. And so we're going to have a lot of stuff going on between now and then, a lot of stuff to talk about as we preview the season, recap the offseason, all that good stuff. For Matt Moore, I'm Adam Mattes. Thank you for tuning in with us, and we'll see you next time.